Do you know me? She asks innocently. This makes Lark, Copper, and Lynx break into more uproarious laughter. What's the joke, Lark? I ask with an edge to my voice. Lark stands in her most arrogant pose, looking for all the world like Pearl, like the old Pearl, but amped up. Well, we had heard a lot of rumors about what happened to dear old Pearl. Frankly, I believed the story that she'd had a baby with a school janitor. But I'm so relieved to know another tale was true, that she went crazy and had to have a lobotomy. Look at her empty eyes. Poor thing. She puts on a mocking tone of sympathy, then laughs. Rowan, what's going on? Pearl asks in an undertone. How do they know me? Yeah, Rowan, Lark says, emphasizing my real name to the confusion of the other girls, who know me as Yarrow. What's going on? What's wrong with you, Lark? I ask. This isn't you. Isn't it? Instantly, her entire demeanor shifts, and she laughs it off. I was just teasing. You know how it is in this school. Come on, we have a lot to talk about. Let's go to my room. I glance at Pearl. Oh, Copper and Lynx can keep her company, Lark says. Right now, the two of us have a lot to catch up on, and maybe some plans to make. It is everything I can do not to look toward the temple. I don't want to risk doing anything to jeopardize our plan to get the seed, but I have to at least get Lark alone, where we can talk openly and honestly. It's okay, Pearl says. I'll get something to drink, and talk to our friends. Her emphasis makes me sure she's going to use the earbud transmitters to let the rest of our group know what's going on. I hope they're okay. I think we would have heard by now if there was trouble. I just hope I have time to figure things out with Lark before we have to flee. I automatically head toward Lark's old room, but she leads me instead to my old room, which apparently is now hers. It has been completely redecorated, except for the lights I had on the walls, the ones that reminded me of the crystal cave in the underground. So, she says lightly, still not turning around. What's new? What's new? I ask, aghast. War and death, miracles and tragedy. She's talking like none of it ever happened. Lark, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with me? She asks, whirling on me with a fierce and frightening light in her eyes. Have her lenses been enhanced? Her irises seem to glow the same lilac as her hair. There's absolutely nothing wrong with me. Are you kidding? I have it all. Everything I always wanted. Lark, this doesn't sound like you. I think the chief... Lark throws back her head and laughs. Oh, so just because you were a victim, you think I'd be one too? No, Rowan. I wasn't altered. I just grew up. A little time away from you, and I began to realize what I actually want in this life, and how to get it. Look at me now. I do, and I see the most beautiful, and the most disappointing thing I can imagine. It was you, and your weakling brother, who held me back. I was soft then, looking for a cause, someone to take care of. Poor sickly Ash. Poor endangered Rowan. You were so interesting then. For about 5 minutes. Now I've found real meaning in my life. I don't believe you. Those things mattered. She comes close enough that I can feel her breath on my face. I'm mesmerized by those perfect lips, but horrified at what she's saying. I rule this place. And one day, I'll rule all of Eden. Pearl was nothing compared to me. A joke. The queen is dead. Long live the queen. Now I'm the center of attention. It's not all about Rowan, the interesting second child with all of her troubles and all of her needs. It was never like that, I protest. Selfish Rowan, who always put herself first and expected the world to bow and scrape to serve her. I reach for her, and she turns away from me, but not so quickly that I can't see that the peculiar glint in her eyes is unshed tears. When she speaks again, her voice is ragged. I did spend a little time in the center. Call it a retreat. It gave me time to think about where my best interests lie and who my true friends are. I was loyal to my friends. She smashes her fist against her thigh, and I see her shoulders shaking. And what did it get me? She whirls around. You abandoned me. I step toward her, but she shrinks back, holding her hands out defensively. I loved you, and you left me in a cage to rot. She shouts at me. I didn't matter, as long as you and your precious Lachlan survived. I was swallowed by nanosand. I could have died, and what did you care? As long as you and Lachlan got to run off and find your romantic happily ever after. I don't see center control in her tear-filled eyes. I see deep hurt, a sense of betrayal, and heartbreaking loneliness. I see the barriers she constructed to combat them, to keep herself from breaking. The brittle cruelty, the change to her appearance, her blatant ambition. The way she is blaming me for all her pain. Lark, I say gently, when I lost you in the desert, I thought I would never be whole again. When I found out you were alive, imprisoned by the chief, not a day went by when I didn't think about you, scheme for some way to save you. For 3 months I tried to get back into Eden to save you, fearing all the time that Chief Elena might have killed you, or changed you. The outside, she asks. What do you mean? It's real, I tell her. I made it there, and I want to take you there. Oh, Lark, you should see it. It's better than we ever could have dreamed. You're lying, she says, but I can see her grief start to break, her hard heart soften. I came for you, Lark. This isn't you. This isn't what you want. Come with me to the living world outside of Eden. Do you mean it? She sniffs, looking suddenly younger, more innocent despite her enhancements. You didn't abandon me? How could I? I ask her. I love you, Lark. I've loved you from the first moment I saw you. She takes a deep breath and lets it out with a shuddering sigh. I've missed you, she says in a small voice. Let's go. We can escape here, find our way to the outermost circle, and escape Eden for good. It isn't the time to mention all of the things we have to do in between. Stop the center mind control. Maybe free the rest of Eden, too. Lark seems too unstable for that. I need her to understand how much I care about her, help her heal from her sorrow and sense of abandonment. I want to, but I can't. Not yet. Why not? What's keeping you here? Well, there is the Rain Festival coming up, and I have the perfect dress. She stops short at my incredulous face and bursts into laughter. Not mocking, superior laughter, but the real old Lark chuckle, full of real, irrepressible mirth. I know. I've been acting just like that kind of person for months. Acting. Oh, great Earth, Rowan, how miserable I've been. How much I've despised myself. Then let's go, I urge her. Soon, very soon. Tonight, It's just, after your escapades, the school locked down on the students a bit. All the Oaks students have an implant that notifies the staff if we leave the grounds without authorization. Oh no! Don't worry, I have a friend who can deactivate it. Do you think Oak students aren't gonna find a way to sneak off campus? Some things never change. He's at the secret party. You remember those? Oh, I really don't want to miss it. It has a wolf pack theme. Oh, but this is so much better. She sounds excited and giddy now. A remarkable change. I can't help but feel a deep sense of satisfaction that I'm the one who saved her from her shell of sadness. Meet me at the party in 10 minutes. You remember where to go, right? I should be ready to go. She hugs me, then all but dances to the door. Thank you for coming to save me, Rowan. You have no idea how much this means to me. She flashes me the brightest smile, and as she leaves, I think, I'll get used to her new and improved face if she keeps smiling at me like that. For a moment, I sit on her bed, overcome with surprise and joy. I never really had hope of finding Lark. I'd assumed she'd met her end in a prison cell. And even if she had escaped or been released, how would I have found her in a city of more than 1 million people? Now, almost magically, things seem to be coming together. Everyone I love is near me. Defeating Chief Elena seems possible. We will save Eden and return to the outside world, and one day we can relax. One day we can be happy. I touch my ear, activating the hidden communicator, and tell the others that I've found Lark. She's coming with us, I say, unable to keep the giddiness from my tone. Immediately, the frequency is jammed with garbled answers from everyone at once. As they all speak over each other, I catch more tones of concern and even dismay than happiness. When they finally settle down and let one person speak at a time, it is Ash who says, "Rowan, are you sure that's a good idea?" I'm stunned. Ash, you of all people! "Why is she here?" Mom breaks in. "She's a student at Oaks," I start to explain. "No, why is she here?" Mom repeats with greater emphasis. "The center must have a plan for her." "And why is she here now, right when we're on a mission of ultimate importance for the survival of the rebellion?" Lachlan wants to know. "It's a coincidence," I say. "She knows me. She wants to come. She doesn't seem like she's under any kind of control." "Doesn't seem," Mom says. "How would you know?" "I'd know," I say adamantly. "I've been there myself." "And you didn't know then," Mom says gently. "I'm meeting her at a secret party in a few minutes," I tell them. "She has to come with us. I can't abandon her again." "I don't like it," Mom says. "I'm coming with you." "I'm already there," Mira whispers into her communicator, and I hear the sounds of partying in the background. "So is Angel. We came with those two girls, but they abandoned us by something they call the punch bowl. It tasted like fruit juice, but after a glass, I think I know why they call it punch. I feel as dizzy as if I've been punched in the head." She giggles. Uh-oh. The Oaks punch is notoriously strong. For a girl who's never had alcohol other than the drugged wine at the passage test, a single glass could send her reeling. "Mira, what are you doing?" Carnelian breaks in. "Don't put yourself in danger. I'm on my way." "But you three have to watch the temple." It's only then that I realize that the only ones who haven't chimed in are Lachlan, Flame, and my father. the ones doing the most dangerous part of the assignment in the Chambers of Mysteries. They're fine, Yarrow assures me. If there was trouble, you'd have heard. If you want Lark, go get her. I admit, I didn't used to understand what you saw in her, but with a couple of surgeries and the right clothes, wow. You know it's about far more than that, I think, chiding the other person in my head. Yeah, but before she was just a scruffy outer circle kid. Now she's spectacular. You're so shallow. I'm you. Now, come on. I want to see this party. I'm dying to know what theme they chose. I left them so many great ideas. I had this inspiration for a wolf-themed party. If we manage to escape Eden again, this might be my last chance for fun. My kind of fun. I'll spend the rest of my life mucking around in the dirt being a stupid farmer or something. I can't help but laugh at my alter ego. She's covering it with sarcasm, but she's as excited about Lark as I am. I check myself in the mirror, for Yarrow's benefit, and head to the secret party hall. As I leave, I give one last look over my shoulder at the room that used to be mine. I had good times here. Yarrow did, anyway. When will things be simple and safe again? Yes, Yarrow exults in my head. They did use one of my ideas. See, my mark on this school will last. When we cross the threshold, we're in a cave. Strange animals are painted on the walls. Shaggy, elephant-like monsters. Huge cats with daggers for teeth. A mock fire flickers, and shadows of people dressed in furs crouch nearby, striking stone against stone. We're in the primitive cave home of our ancestors. They hide behind stone walls from the terrible wild beasts that roam outside. Then we pass beyond the cavemen, into the party hall, to be greeted with a wild primeval wilderness. A boreal forest scene is projected on the walls, spruce and larch trees, amid gently falling snow. Shadows slink among the trees, their eyes menacingly watching the dancers. There are synthetic trees. The old Rowan would have been impressed, because they look almost exactly like real trees. But now I can tell the difference at a glance. These trees have no soul. It's impressive, though, and I am truly stunned when I see huge, shaggy timber wolves stalking through the partiers. In varying shades of gray and black and white, the wolves pace and snarl right next to the students. I see one of the Oaks kids reach out a hand to one, and it sniffs, then snaps at his extended fingers. The boy pulls his hand back with a startled laugh. A wolf pack theme, Yarrow says. Perfect. I'm impressed by the technology of the holograms. They're smart, reactive projections that can interact with people. But they're acting like wolves, more or less, and want nothing to do with the people. The wolves interact with each other, but they scorn humans. It's amazing. The rest of the party is just like I remember it, or how Yarrow remembers it. Instantly, my body is swept away by the pulsing, multicolored strobe lights and the pounding rhythm of the music. It's a song I've never heard, sung by a girl with a sultry voice, with the line, "I want to live in your skin," repeated over and over to an intricate bass line. I scan the room for my lilac princess. Over by the crystal punch bowl, Mira is watchful, but swaying slightly. Pearl is near her, being propositioned by an Oaks freshman she would have scorned before. Now, though she is clearly not interested, I can tell from her body language across the room that she's being polite. I have to fight the urge to indulge in this scene. The music, the lights. All I need is a drink, and I'll be dancing and looking for trouble, trying to pat the surly wolves. Some visceral part of me longs for that, and I have to remind myself that everything depends on this night going without a hitch. I've already thrown a wrench in our perfect plan by finding Lark. Now I have to make sure everything works smoothly, despite that. I can't lose my focus. I make my way to Mira and Angel, and we speak in low voices while I wait. Suddenly the strobe lights stop flashing, and the room is just illuminated by a multi-hued glow. For a moment, I see after images of the lights flashing on my inner lids, still pulsing in time with the beat. I hear a girl next to me say, "You know what that means." "Yeah, Her Royal Highness is here," another answers. "Why does she have to be such a buzzkill, shutting down the flashing lights every time she comes to a party?" "It's a power thing," the first girl says. A secret smile touches my face. I know why the flashing lights were killed. I know who is here. I turn and see the crowd part near the door. It is like a vacuum, an empty space I feel compelled to fill. Slowly I walk toward that lilac-haired goddess. I'm getting used to her enhancements. They look more natural on second viewing. It doesn't matter what she looks like. She's my lark. But, oh, great Earth, she is lovely. "You came," she says as I glide up to her. "I told you I would," I say, leaning close to be heard over the loud music. "I'll never let you down, Lark." For a moment, a peculiar expression crosses her face, but she shakes it off with a smile. "Just like old times, isn't it?" she says. "Do you remember when we first met? Under those dim lights in the Rainforest Club, I thought you were Ash." "How could I forget?" I ask, feeling mesmerized by the past. "That was the most perfect night of my life. My first taste of freedom. But the taste of that forbidden fruit had terrible consequences. Would it all come out right in the end? The suffering and loss would be worth it if I could end future suffering, not just for me, but for all the people of Eden." "So much has changed," Lark says dreamily. "No," I say. "So much has happened. But I haven't changed. Neither have you, I think." "Maybe I've changed," she says with a sly, seductive smile. "For the better, I hope." "You are always my own Lark, the same girl I met in the shadows. My first friend." I stroke a strand of her lilac hair. "There's so much I need to tell you." "Me too," Lark says. "But not yet." "You're right. We have to go." I take her hand to pull her to the exit, at the same time looking over the crowd to catch Angel's eye. With a jerk of my head, I tell her it is time to go. I see Lark's hand flutter to her lips. Then, instead of coming with me, she resists and pulls me to her. "Dance with me," she says, laughing. "We don't have time," I begin. Then she kisses me, her mouth so soft and warm, parting my lips. I melt into her. Then I feel something slip past my tongue, a little pill that effervesces the second it hits my mouth. "Lark, what did you do?" Then, suddenly, I don't care. All I can see is her. The colors, the sounds, the other people fade into a blur, and the only thing in the universe is Lark. Her lips, her hands, her brilliant eyes locking mine in an embrace of souls. We're dancing, more slowly than the music's beat, creating our own rhythm. I see Mom and Ash and Carnelian enter the party, and that makes me vaguely happy. More love in the room, I think. Ash and Pearl, Mira and Carnelian. The more love, the better. My body feels both energized and ultimately relaxed. Why am I here? Oh yes, for Lark. Everything is for a lark. Time slips away. All I know is the sinuous movement of our bodies against each other. Until an explosion, screams, an acrid smell fills the room, and students are running for the doors, which are blocked. In utter confusion, I whirl around to see green shirts blocking the exits. I feel something echoing in my brain. I don't know how else to describe it. A pulse goes through the room, like something at a frequency I can almost but not quite hear. Then all at once, the screams stop. The panic subsides. All the Oak students are standing like calm and barely mobile statues, vague smiles on all of their faces. Someone shuts off the music, and the only sounds are from Mira shouting a warning before a green shirt grabs her from behind and claps a hand over her mouth. They have Ash and Pearl. Carnelian puts up a good struggle, but a gun to Mira's head makes him stop fighting. I count 5 green shirts. And 1 trim woman with short blonde hair, wearing an impeccably tailored suit in dove gray, with a gun strapped to her thigh. Chief Elena. She has an arm looped around Mom's throat, a gun pointed at her head. I turn to Lark, and in my initial confusion, I still trust her completely. I try to get between her and the danger, to protect her. Instead, she bypasses me to stand near Chief Elena. I'm forced to admit the painful truth. You betrayed me! She regards me, her face looking unnaturally perfect, supremely cruel. It hurts, doesn't it? No, it can't be true, I think, my head clearing. We were so close. I was so sure. How could you do this to me, Lark? You left me to rot, she hisses. 2 green shirts move behind me, but don't grab me. Chief Elena calmly speaks over Mom's shoulder. Your friend Lark was a much more promising student than you ever were, Rowan. Or is it Yarrow? I could put another personality in there for you if you'd like. Oh, but with Lark, I tried a new technique. Deleting 1 persona and layering another on top of it turned out to be too traumatic for the brain, as your case proved. The 2 selves were always fighting. With Lark, I kept her core personality and went delving for all the parts she kept hidden. The secret jealousies, the ambition, the vanity. It was all there in her, just buried under all that nobility. Chief Elena makes a noise of derision. We learned a valuable lesson from you, Rowan. Why change a person completely when you can just bring their fundamental human nature to the fore? Every human has those greedy, grasping animal instincts in them. With Lark, I just played them up. So she isn't a new person like you were with Yarrow. She is still Lark. She remembers everything that happened to her. I just helped her see what is truly important in life. You took away everything good in her! I scream. Who needs goodness when you can have power and control? Lark chimes in. I'll never be helpless again. I'll never depend on you or anyone else for my happiness. Oh, Lark, I say miserably. This is the real Lark, Chief Elena goes on. The one that was hidden behind petty morality and fear of what society thinks. Her core self. Isn't it beautiful? I did the same thing with the populace of Eden, but I went deeper into the heart of what it means to be human. Do you know what people want more than anything? What they long for? What they work so hard to achieve, though they never realize it? She pauses dramatically. People don't want to think, she says, pronouncing each word distinctly and slowly. That is the blessing I gave to the people of Eden. Most of them, anyway. And soon, all of them. Very soon. I look around for any hope of escape. With only 5 green shirts plus the chief, it should be possible. But they are heavily armed, and the other Oaks kids are just milling around, unconcerned, unaware. If we try anything, how many might be caught in the crossfire? And with a gun at her temple, my mom would be the first to die. I am truly surprised to see you again, Chief Elena goes on, and on such a noble cause. Rescuing your friend. A friend who despises you? And for that misguided heroism, you sacrifice so many of your other friends and allies. No wonder you were such a disappointment to me. She shakes her head as she looks at Mira, Carnelian, Ash. She doesn't seem to recognize Pearl in her veil. That was a splendid stunt you pulled, blowing up the underground. She goes on. It caused no end of aggravation for us. She caresses Mom's cheek with the muzzle of her gun. The only bright spot to that event was the satisfying thought that you were dead. Tell me, how did you survive the blast? I can't tell her about Harmonia and the outside world. She's heard rumors, but if she ever knew they were true, what would she do? I want to end her control, give the people of Eden freedom. I still don't know if they should be turned loose on the world, or if a million people in the environment will just set about destroying the planet again. One thing I know for sure is that the Eden that is under Chief Elena's control can't be allowed anywhere near Harmonia and the peaceful wilderness. If she knew what was out there, she'd want to control it, too. I envision all the people of Harmonia overrun by green shirts, forcibly implanted with lenses, turned into robots by this evil woman. I was lucky, I say stubbornly. She chuckles cruelly as she squeezes my mom's neck tighter. Mom winces, but grits her teeth. Not so lucky if you are my prisoner again. Oh, the fun we'll have on the operating table, my dear former daughter. Now tell me, she growls. Is there another layer to the underground that we didn't discover? Do the rebels have some technology that will protect them from a blast of that size? Do you think I'd tell you anything? I ask defiantly. She smiles. Oh, I think you'll tell me everything. Eventually. Your brain is mine to explore at my leisure, my child. She's not your child, Mom screams, struggling to break free of Elena's clutches. How interesting to find you alive, Rosalba. For the moment. This night is full of surprises. My mom fumes at her, twisting futilely. Put down the gun and fight me, Elena. How touching. What a primal force maternal love is. And that is why I never had children. I don't like anything to control me. You unnatural woman, Mom shouts. Can't you see you're destroying your own species? If you control their brains, they're not even people anymore. Ecopan will stop you. Its directive is to save humanity, and when it realizes what you're doing... Ecopan has had every opportunity to intervene, she answers smoothly. It obviously agrees with what I'm doing, for the benefit of all mankind. One of the green shirts checks his watch and whispers something into her ear. Already? She asks him, and he nods. Well, aren't my troops a model of efficiency? Oh, very well. She backs toward the door, dragging Mom with her. It appears I don't have very much leisure after all. You and I will have some mother-daughter time later, my dear. And your mother and I have so much to catch up on. The rest of these people are unnecessary. Guards, kill them all! I hear weapons being racked, and I scream. Wait, I'll tell you anything you want to know. She holds up a hand to stop the green shirts, and they stand poised, with their weapons pointed at the head of everyone I love. Except for Lark. I can't believe she is doing this of her own free will. She might be lost to me, but I still love her. The real Lark, who I know is hidden underneath. To save her, to save my mom and friends, I tell Chief Elena all about Harmonia, about the beautiful living world beyond the desert of Eden. Maybe my words will move her, I think. Maybe it will make her realize that war, the controlling people, is futile. She doesn't believe me.
Are you still spouting the same deluded nonsense you did before?
I suppose I broke you even more than I realized.
Ah, well. We'll find out when we dissect your brain. If you won't tell me what I want to know, then we have no use for any of you.
It's true, Mira chimes in. There is a world beyond Eden. I live there. I was born there. The chief whirls on her.
Hold her head.
Deftly, the chief pops out Mira's fake lenses. Another second child, I see. Is the world overrun with the vermin? She waves her hand.
Kill her, and round up the others.
No! I scream, as without hesitation, the green shirt puts a gun to the back of Mira's head. I close my eyes at the sound. But when I open them, the green shirt is on the ground. Mira's foot on his throat. Chief Elena and the other green shirts all have their weapons pointed at Mira, but the chief laughs and waves them away.
Your wild paradise must be quite dangerous to produce a fighter like you.
You're too interesting to kill quickly.
Let's see. Who shall it be, then?
The Oak students standing near her look on with blank faces, oblivious to the threats and violence. For a moment, we do nothing. I feel too paralyzed to act. But Carnelian, seeing Mira in danger, suddenly breaks free of the green shirt holding him, elbowing him in the head and surging toward his love. Two of the green shirts break from guarding the door to tackle him. One hits him in the head with the butt of his gun, and Carnelian lays on the floor, groaning and insensible. I hear Chief Elena say in a bored voice,
"This is getting out of hand. Luckily, I can delegate."
I see Chief Elena take out a small device and tap in a command. All at once, every one of the students seems to come unnaturally alert. Then chaos erupts. The students are fighting. Us. Everyone. It's like someone flipped a switch in their brains that turned on unthinking aggression. I realize that's exactly what happened. She's turned on a localized tweak of her enhanced mind control. It probably wasn't even that hard. Just code the brain to signal the body to release adrenaline, testosterone, and all the other hormones associated with violence and aggression. She can't control them with enough finesse to tell them who to fight, but she can turn them into mindless killers and let them loose. With their overwhelming numbers, they'll take care of us as easily as the green shirts. One of the students takes a swing at me. Another kicks for my shins. Someone pulls my hair from behind. Luckily, none of these people are fighters, but I don't want to hurt any of them, so for now there's a limit to how much I can fight back. I hear gunshots. The green shirts aren't leaving all the fighting to the brainwashed students. I try to reach Mom, my fists clenched, ready to fight, to kill, no matter what the consequences. There's no going back now. This is a final stand for all of us. We're doomed. I know it. Now the only thing we can hope for is to take the chief down with us. Without her, maybe all this will end. My murderous charge is halted when a slender arm snakes around my neck, pulling me back and off my feet. Gasping for breath, I pull Lark's forearm off my trachea and roll to my back, but immediately she's on top of me. There's nothing of my sweet Lark in her contorted face, and I know she'll kill me if she can. I'm stronger than she is, and roll her over so that I'm on top. But I have no wish to hurt her, and she uses that to her advantage,
throwing a punch from the bottom that makes me rear back to avoid it. She uses this momentum to flip me again, and we roll over and over, fighting for dominance, until we hit the wall. We end up with Lark on top, and in the confusion of zombie-like Oak students, someone kicks me in the head. Someone else steps on my hand, so that Lark manages to get her hands around my throat. Her grip is like steel, like an eagle's talons. With the wall on one side, oblivious Oak students in their stupor on the other, I can't roll her. I can't even get my hands up to fend her off. This all happens in seconds. I hear gunfire and wonder why the green shirts haven't shot me yet. It doesn't matter. Lark is doing their job for them. My pulse pounds against her squeezing hands. Slower. Slower. Lark, please, I beg, as my consciousness dims. For a second, she falters, and her grip loosens enough to let a little more blood to my brain. No, you won't trap me again. I'm better alone. She squeezes, but I've managed to get one hand free, the hand closest to the wall. I claw at her choking fingers, but I'm too weak to get purchase. I wonder what is going on around me. So much confusion. So many gunshots. My flailing hand brushes something on the wall. It is a panel of switches. With the last of my conscious mind, I realize what it is, what it means. It is the control panel for the lights and speakers. I flail at the switches, hitting them all, and suddenly the room explodes in flashing light and booming music. The strobes are dizzyingly fast. Lark's eyes grow wide, and she stiffens, which for a moment makes her hands clench even tighter around my throat. Then she topples like a tree, convulsing as the flashing lights trigger an epileptic seizure. Gasping, I roll to my knees and look at the chaos around me. Chaos and carnage. At least a dozen Oak students lay bloody and wounded. Two green shirts lay sprawled on the ground, too. Then suddenly, everything changes. The students stop, looking confused, and start to mill around, averting their eyes from blood and anything else disturbing. What's happening? Chief Elena shouts. Why aren't they fighting? I see a slim figure with hair like fire, furiously typing with her thumbs at some kind of device. It is one of the localized disruptors that blocks mind control. With the students out of the equation, we have a chance to fight our way out of here. Oh, and there is Lachlan, his face illuminated by muzzle flash as he grimly takes down another green shirt. I hear Chief Elena shouting at her remaining green shirts to retreat, and the gunfire stops. There is a scramble near the door, and all I can see is one green shirt, with Chief Elena hidden behind him, dragging my mom, trying to edge to the exit. He has his gun out, but can't pick a target. At best, he'll get one shot before being mowed down. Lachlan and Flame both point guns at him. Sorry we were late, Lachlan says, as I struggle to my feet. Better late than never, I choke out. My father rushes forward, taking me in his arms. Are you okay? He asks, touching my face, looking into my eyes with deep concern. I nod, but point to Mom, held hostage. You, Chief Elena says, staring at my father. The biggest traitor of them all. My chief physician turned rebel. Did you really think you would get away with letting all my little test subjects go? And now this deluded attempt to rescue Lark. All very heroic, but soon you'll realize exactly how little it matters. After tonight, Eden is mine. She laughs wickedly. But know this. I never suffered traitors to live. Before any of us can react, she aims her gun around the green shirt's bulk and shoots my dad in the chest. Then she ducks out of the door, and the green shirt slams it closed. I rattle the door, but it is locked from the outside. Mom is gone,
While Flame tries to get the door unlocked, I run to my father's side. Oh, Great Earth, not now. Not when I've just started to forgive him. When for the first time in my life, I have a chance at having a real father. I press at the wound in his chest, but the damage is too great. Dad's eyelids flutter, and he clutches at my hand. So proud. So sorry. Then he presses something in my hand. His eyes roll back in his head. And he is gone. I grind my teeth, clench my fists, and look at the bloodshed around me. It better be worth it, Ash says in angry despair. Death is never worth it, I say grimly, but then hold up the thing my father just gave me. But we got the seed. With Chief Elena gone, the Oaks kids are free of their mind control. I don't know if they can even remember what just happened, but they are completely freaked out and are fighting to get out of the door. My eyes turn away from my father's corpse. Carnelian is hugging Mira, so relieved his warrior woman is alive, when he thought for sure she was doomed. There are Lachlan and Ash and Flame. Lark is in the corner, unconscious. Angel stands panting with a bruised cheek and disheveled hair. She's shaken, but it looks like she acquitted herself well. We have to go after Mom, Ash says, starting for the door, which Flame has just managed to get open. Lachlan catches him by the shoulder. That would be suicidally stupid, he tells my brother. Ash gives him a furious look and jerks away, looking to me for support. I can't lose her again, I cry. You know what will happen to her. If we can catch them before they take her off campus, Angel suggests, but Lachlan shakes his head. I want to go after Mom, but I know it is no use right now. Chief Elena didn't bring many people with her because she had to move fast when she got word from Lark that I was here. She got as many green shirts as she could, but her objective was speed, not numbers. She thought it was just me and Angel and Mira. She didn't think she'd have to fight all of you. But now that she knows, she's calling in reinforcements. Right, Lachlan says. Your mom will be in a center prison in moments, and this place will be swarming with troops. We have to get out of here now, or we'll be captured ourselves. And then getting the seed will be for nothing, Flame says. The sacrifices, for nothing. She looks at my father's body. He might have made some mistakes in his life, but once he saw the right course, he was a fearless, selfless leader. The rebellion would not have come this far without him. I can't have a true relationship with him, but at least I can remember him as an honorable man. At the end, anyway. With the seed, and more time to plan, and more people, we can get into the center, and not only shut down the mind control, but rescue your mom, too. Lachlan promises us. Ash shakes his head. She would come for us. If we were captured, she'd go charging right into the center. And she'd die, Lachlan says harshly. Come on, we have to leave before more green shirts come. Rowan, do you think the chief knows what we came here for? No, I tell him. I'm sure they don't know anything about the temple, or the seed. He looks at me questioningly. Lark thinks I came for her. Didn't you hear the chief? She thinks I brought all of you here simply to rescue Lark. Would I have? I wonder. Would I have put my friends, my family, in jeopardy to save her? I think she still sees us as a bunch of kids on a sentimental mission, not rebels bent on saving Eden. So she might not go all out to catch us. At least, not as much as if she knew the truth. Then we have a chance, Lachlan says. School staff will be here any minute to sort this out and help the wounded. We can slip out in the confusion. I nod as I kneel to check on Lark. She's still completely unconscious. I hook my hands under her armpits and look around, waiting for one of my friends to help me carry her.
"You're not serious," Flame says.
"What do you mean?" I ask, uncomprehending. Lachlan answers for her, very gently. "Rowan, she's under direct control of Chief Elena. It's too dangerous to bring her along."
"She'll lead the chief directly to us, wherever we are,"
Flame says, her voice so businesslike.
"It might be against her will, but she's the enemy now."
"I know, but this is Lark," I insist. "I don't want to leave her either," Ash says, and comes nearer to me, so that I assume he's going to help me carry her. It turns out, he's not on my side either. "But this is more important than one person."
"Would you leave me behind for the sake of the mission?"
I ask hotly.
"I wouldn't leave you."
"Maybe not," Ash says. "But you would try to make us leave you behind. If you were hurt, if helping you threaten the mission. You know you would." I bow my head to the truth of that. But I can't leave her here. I thought I'd never see her again. She thinks I betrayed her, abandoned her already. I don't care if half of that was Chief Elena's manipulation. Part of it is real. And to think that Lark feels that about me, even a little bit, is utterly heartbreaking. I don't ever want to see that look in her face again.
"I won't leave her," I declare adamantly. "But I can't carry her by myself, not for long. Ash?"
He shakes his head.
"Lachlan?"
"That's not even Lark anymore.
I'm sorry, but I won't let her be the reason we fail. I won't let anyone be the reason."
I can see the effort it costs him to say this, though. He knows the right thing to do, the humane thing. And I know his decision makes perfect sense. And yet, I look from face to face, begging for help.
"Mira?"
I ask desperately. For a moment, she looks at me. Then, making a sudden decision, she leaves Carnelian's side, even when he tries to hold her back. "From this big lug over here, I learned about love. And from you, Rowan, I learned about true friendship. I know you feel both things for this poor girl here. She betrayed you. It's her fault your father is dead. But if you think there's a chance for redemption, I'll help you to the ends of the earth." I'm overwhelmed by her strength of character. She helps me pick up Lark, but neither of us can carry her easily by ourselves. I hear Carnelian give a reluctant sigh.
"Here, allow me," he says, and scoops up Lark with ease. "Everyone deserves to be saved," he says, with stolid certainty. "Her now, all people soon."
With a nod of gratitude, I follow him out into the dark campus. Our group slips off the grounds and into the street, prepared for anything. We've made it through the first circle when Ash says,
"Vic, look out!"
There are a couple of party girls, a little too old for the clothes and makeup they're wearing, out for a night of trying to recapture their youth. At first, they look like they're going to pass us, just like everyone else has so far. But this time, it is different. As they pass us, their lively, shrill conversation ceases, and they stare at us.
"They look suspicious," one says.
"Yeah, very suspicious," her friend replies.
"We should tell someone."
"They're disruptive,"
the first woman says, with her lip curled in derision.
"Different."
We hurry on, but they follow us, slowly, methodically, robotically.
"We can't be on the streets anymore," Flame says.
"What's going on?" I ask.
"You've seen how the mind control works.
People have been programmed to basically ignore anything outside of themselves that is unpleasant, like civil war, or injustice, or inequality. They're just comfortable, insular in their own lives. But with a little bit of a tweak, the center can activate another aspect of that program that makes people look for anything a little off. Sneaky behavior, the wrong clothes, something out of place, that might clue them in that something is about to be unpleasant. It makes them want to put a stop to it before it tries to disrupt their lives. I consider this as we hurry away from the women, who are still steadily following us, whispering to each other, and eyeing us with suspicion. So, it's another way they make people ignore unpleasantness? Basically by nipping it in the bud? Yes, Flame confirms. It is an insidiously subtle piece of programming. All of it plays on different aspects of people's natural complacency. Most people will give up all kinds of freedom for comfort. All she has to do is send out a signal, and suddenly every citizen of Eden is a spy. I gasp as I realize the implications of this. So those women... She nods. Along with anyone else who sees us tonight. To the average unaffected citizen, we would pass muster. Now every person is asking themselves who we are, why they haven't seen us before, where we're going, are we behaving perfectly normally, or too normally. Every person who sees us tonight is analyzing us, and reporting us to the center. We have to get off the street now. We won't be able to take the sneaky alleys and basement routes until we get farther away from the center, Ash says. He knows the secret rebel routes well now. Where can we go?
I have no idea, Lachlan admits. We have to be on the streets for a while.
At once, Ash and I look at each other. We know this area well, and simultaneously realize exactly where we should go. This way, I say, and we run away from the slowly following women. They've met a man. And as we run, they point us out, stopping to confer. Any moment now, they'll contact the authorities. It's a gamble. A big property in the inner circles is rare, and it is entirely possible that a new family is living in our home. But I figure that it is also very likely that the uncertainty of our family status means it couldn't be sold fast. Mom is legally dead, and I don't officially exist. But my father is still the legal owner. The property probably hangs in legal limbo. So when we turn the next corner, we make a run for it, evading the women and the man, and luckily not meeting anyone else until we reach my old family home. And so it proves, for we find it looking unkempt and apparently unoccupied. Locked, of course, Ash says. I can get in through the back door in the courtyard. Or one of the windows there, I say, and without further thought, start scanning the wall of the back courtyard for handholds. I've climbed this wall thousands of times, from the inside. I've only rarely scaled it from the outside, and with the smoother, more decorative stone face, it is a much trickier proposition. Luckily, we lived in the only house in Eden to be made from real stone. It was Aaron Albaz's house, almost 1,000 years ago, after the Ecofail. All other buildings are made of synthetic material or solar-powered panels, almost impossible to climb. I realize how much I've changed in the 3 months of living in the wilderness. Once, these straight, artificial lines were all I knew, and my mind and body had adapted to dealing with them. Now, after having lived in nature for even a little while, I rebel against all this regularity. Though it was harder at first, my body longs now to climb a tree, with its organic curves, its living skin, the hundreds of bugs and lichens living on its surface. Already the city seems an alien place. For a second I turn, my fingers curled around the first handhold, to make a joke to Mira about having a climbing competition. She always beat me up trees. Maybe this time, I'd beat her up this wall. But when I look at her, she's already 6 feet up the wall. There's a huge grin on her face. I get to compete on your territory now, she whispers,
and with a low laugh, I follow her. Then pass her. This is a lot different from the trees and natural rock formations she's used to.
Rowan, I hear a weak voice